Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week's show is a call to action, specifically a call to Spring Rising. And if you don't know what that is yet, you should check out springrising.org, because on Saturday, March 21st at high noon, we are going to hold a massive rally in front of the White House and fill the streets of Washington, D.C. with a march to the U.S. Capitol. And the message we are bringing as the latest version of the war on Iraq enters year number 13 since shock and awe is no to this war. And yes to peace, no to the false choice between loving ISIS and doing nothing or dropping yet more bombs, yes to an alternative approach to the world resembling one taken in the past and taken today by most of the nations of the world, an approach that does not see bombing as the answer to all conflicts. We propose to end and prevent not just one war, but all the wars, by moving to a system of peace and nonviolence, by utilizing the rule of law rather than shredding it, by engaging in diplomacy rather than threats and bullying, by providing actual humanitarian aid, which costs so much less than so-called military aid, but does so much more good for everyone involved. Now, Washington, D.C. is a long ways away for a lot of you, and there are solidarity events being planned all over the place. You can find one or create one at springrising.org, but consider these facts. 1. When the president was a Republican, huge numbers of people did find a way to get to Washington. 2. It's looking like very large numbers will find a way to make it to Washington on March 21st for Spring Rising, despite the president being a Democrat. Buses are being arranged by groups in lots of towns, and your town can do the same. This is groundbreaking in the post-war on Vietnam era, and you won't want to miss it. 3. Remember all those emails you all used to send me by the hundreds for years, pleading for all the different peace groups to unite around the same action rather than competing or conflicting? Admit it, there was often more passion for this elusive unity than for peace itself. Well, here it is. All the big groups and splinter groups and niche groups and tangential groups are signing on to and participating in Spring Rising, and so can yours. UFPJ and ANSWER and UNAC and all the peace organizations are part of this, together. You wouldn't want the Day of Unity to arrive and you to be sitting at home knowingly telling yourself that you're with them in spirit, but smart enough to know there's no point. 4. In case you missed it, the peace movement finally ended the war on Iraq in 2011 by means of a treaty President Bush was forced to sign in 2008. Then in 2013, something funny happened on the way to flattening Syria, and that was what they had in mind. Read what Seymour Hersh found about the plans. They were going to destroy Syria. And what happened? 10 years of anti-war activism scared them off. Nobody wanted to be the jerk who voted for another Iraq, not with the sort of public sentiment there was against sending missiles into Syria. This was the key factor. It was the same factor that led the British House of Commons to say no. It was the same factor that led the U.S. to finally agree to work with Russia and Syria to eliminate Syria's chemical weapons. There were other factors that helped. But had attacking Iraq been seen as a badge of honor, Syria would have been leveled. Now, Syria is being destroyed much more slowly, with U.S. weapons flowing to the so-called moderate neck-slitters, who in some cases surrender them to their opponents. Ceasefires and diplomacy and aid have yet to really be attempted in the way that fueling the violence is endlessly tried and retried as if there's just no other choice. I sat in a trial a few weeks ago in Alexandria, Virginia, of Jeffrey Sterling, who had gone to Congress with the news that the CIA was giving plans for a nuclear bomb to Iran, plans in which they'd introduced some obvious mistakes on the theory that the dumb Iranians would never notice and build their bomb wrong. Their Russian operative who took the plans to the Iranians was also not supposed to notice the flaws, but he did, immediately. The display of recklessness, stupidity, and imbecility in that courtroom was beyond belief, and nobody was there, and the young all-white jury found Sterling guilty. One of the pieces of evidence in the trial discussed the next country the CIA was, in 2000, working on giving flawed nuclear bomb plans to after Iran. They blanked out the name of the country but showed how many letters had been blanked out. They also left it clear that the country's name began with a vowel. Only Iraq fit. These clowns were planning to give nuclear bomb plans to Iraq just before publicly making the case for invading Iraq before it nuked us. But what else were they supposed to do? You can't do nothing, right? We must either love ISIS and do nothing, or drop more bombs and create even more enemies. It's a tough, counterproductive path to Armageddon, but somebody's got to follow it. When the director of national intelligence, Dennis Blair, concluded that the drone murders in countries around the world were counterproductive and should be stopped, President Obama had no option but to fire him, for the good of us all. Somebody always has to invent a bunch of lies to make this tough policy more palatable. When General Sherman raged through the South burning stuff, he told himself that from here on out, the South would know war so well that it would never want another one. And 150 years later, I dare you to just hint at taking down the statues of the Southern war losers in a Southern town. The South is the leading supporter of U.S. wars. Without the politics of the South, the U.S. might find its way clear all the way to respecting the rights of some other country. During World War II, the main newspaper in Atlanta, where Sherman had begun his march, editorialized in favor of burning every house in Japan. So when Obama, McCain, Hillary, Jeb, Warren, et al. Tell you that bombing Iraq will turn Iraqis against war, you can believe them or your own lying eyes. Have the past decades made Iraq more peaceful? Might ending slavery the way most nations did it, that is to say, without a war, have produced something less than 150 years of resentment and displaced blowback? But what good will marching around about it on a Saturday do? Can't we resist the war machine on a weekday when it's at work? Can't we try something different? The peace movement we have had thus far has been pushing back against the wars, ending some, preventing others. But the war machine is still roaring on, the wars are multiplying, the madmen are toying with a nuclear war with Russia, and Congress is debating whether to vote on so-called authorizing one of the wars, even though it's already killing thousands of people, and the president says he'll just carry on illegally no matter what Congress does. And never mind the Constitution, and never mind the United Nations, he's a Democrat. And that should be enough for you. Because there is one war he doesn't want. A war with Iran. And Congress has invited Bibi Netanyahu to help get that one started. Well, as it happens, Spring Rising is going to include 4 days of all variety of creative events, resistance, teach-ins, music, theater, outreach, lobbying, and education, a tour of war criminals' homes and offices, and reenactments of peace actions of the past as part of a thorough anti-war intervention into pro-war Washington, where, by the way, resistance to Netanyahu's agenda is on the rise. The schedule for Spring Rising is at springrising.org, as are rides and housing information. And let's be clear about the big anti-war versus pro-peace debate. Everyone from the Pentagon to the drug dealer claims to be pro-peace. We are anti-war because we are opposed to war and want to abolish the institution and redirect the massive resources that are so inexcusably wasted on it while the planet and its people cry out in need. But opposing wars will not prevent new ones. To do that, we need to establish a culture and a political system of peace. A teach-in that I'll be part of, organized by World Beyond War, will be dedicated to that project, and you can find more at worldbeyondwar.org. So please don't contact me to explain that you can't be anti-war or you can't be pro-peace because you're the other one. If we're not both, we're done for. If we are both, we're stronger together. The problem with just stopping a war and not advancing an alternative agenda is illustrated by the fact that 1 year after we stopped a U.S. war on Syria in 2013, the U.S. government proposed attacking the opposite side in that war, explained that it couldn't possibly succeed, but made a lot of noise about scary murder videos, and suddenly people wanted war again. Here's David Vondrella in this week's Time magazine. Quote, "The greatest threat that ISIS poses, even to the poor souls living under ISIS rule, is the unintended damage that might follow from the effort to eradicate this group. As dangerous as it is to have a terrorist kingdom in the middle of the world's geopolitical tinderbox, ousting ISIS will be every bit as dangerous." End quote. Drella goes from there immediately into the debate over whether U.S. troops or local troops should do the job. His article is followed by Max Boot arguing for U.S. ground troops and Carl Vick arguing for U.S. bombing with local ground troops. All three writers seem to be aware that ISIS wanted U.S. bombing and wants U.S. ground troops even more, that ISIS recruitment climbs in response to U.S. military action. All three can't help but be aware that terrorist kingdoms like Saudi Arabia already exist in the region with the blessing of the U.S. government and of magazine writers who seek to please the U.S. government. All three are fairly condescending toward local troops, eager to somehow get Sunnis to attack Sunnis, and wary of allowing Iranian, quote, death squads to get involved in the, you know, mass killing they are proposing. None of the three have one word to say about the great many innocents already killed in the latest U.S. bombings, but all three seem to grasp that the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003 was necessary for the creation of ISIS. All three seem to understand that fighting ISIS is counterproductive, and yet all three strive to place the need to attack ISIS beyond the range of any debate. The question is not whether to make the disaster worse, but exactly how to do it. What, after all, makes the region a global tinderbox? Israel's nukes? Certainly not. Those are not supposed to be mentioned or even thought about. Well, then, all the other weapons. But over 80% of those are supplied by the United States, so that can't be it. Perhaps the violent overthrows and devastation of so many governments and countries. But it was the U.S. and friends who destroyed Iraq and made Libya what it is, and who have done what they're still doing to Afghanistan. It is the U.S. that has ruined Yemen. It is the U.S. that arms and supports Israel's wars. It is the U.S. that props up the terrorist states in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and Egypt. Surely what makes the region a tinderbox, rather than a region rich in oil about which greedy earth-destroying interests might be concerned, is something unthinkable or nonsensical or inscrutable, something ethnic or religious or unworthy of consideration. Because otherwise, we might have to consider ceasefires and arms embargoes and diplomacy and humanitarian aid as possible alternatives to the usual choices of 1. Do nothing, or 2. Make it all worse, with more of what caused much of the problem in the first place. We might have to consider that it isn't ISIS that's posing the greatest threat in the form of, quote, the effort to eradicate the group. Let me read you a petition signed by a long list of admirable people, and which you can sign at rootsaction.org. No new authorization for the use of military force. The U.S. is considering another authorization for the use of military force, a broad approval for more war. This is the last thing we need. These wars are not making us safer, but generating enemies. They are not surgical operations, but mass killings, as well as assaults on the natural environment and the public budget, not to mention excuses for curtailing civil liberties. Please sign this statement for delivery to the media and Congress. We oppose any new authorization for the use of military force and call for the immediate repeal of the authorizations passed by Congress in 2001 and 2002. Don't believe signing petitions helps? Read the list of successes in the FAQ on the rootsaction.org site. Want to do more? Me too. Let's rise up for spring rising. The fact that we need to change the discourse and put war opposition on the agenda is illustrated by how Congress members have explained their choice to skip Netanyahu's speech, as several fine groups have urged them to do at skipthespeech.org. Don't get me wrong, I was glad to hear that Congress members would skip Netanyahu's speech no matter what reason they offered. But here are some of them. It's too close to Netanyahu's election. That doesn't persuade me. If we had fair, open, publicly funded, ungerrymandered, verifiably counted elections, then politics wouldn't be a dirty word, and we would want politicians to show themselves doing things to try to please us before, during, and after elections. I want them acting that way now, even with our broken system. I don't want the U.S. interfering in Israeli elections, but allowing a speech is hardly the same as backing coups in Ukraine and Venezuela or giving Israel billions of dollars worth of weapons every year. Here's another. The speaker didn't ask the president. This is likely the big reason that Democrats were promising to skip the speech. I'm actually amazed more of them hadn't made that promise. Netanyahu seemed to me to miss the extent to which the United States has become a term-limited monarchy. Congress typically wants to pass the buck on wars to the president. The president typically controls one of the two parties quite tightly. But do I actually care that Congress didn't consult the president? Hell no. Imagine if, during the run-up to the 2003 attack on Iraq, Congress had offered a joint session microphone to El-Baradei, or Sarkozy, or Putin, or indeed Hussein, to denounce all the bogus claims about WMDs in Iraq. Would you have been outraged by the impoliteness toward President Bush, or delighted that a million people might not get killed for no damn reason? These kinds of reasons do have a practical weakness. They lead to calls for postponing the speech rather than canceling it. Some other reasons have more serious flaws. Here's one. The speech damages bipartisan U.S. support for Israel. Really? A slim minority of the president's party skips a speech for a laundry list of lame excuses, and suddenly the United States is going to stop providing all the free weapons and vetoing every attempt at legal accountability for the crimes of the Israeli government? And that would be a bad thing if it actually happened? Another. The speech hurts the critical effort of negotiations to keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. This is the worst of the bad reasons. It pushes the false idea that Iran is trying to build a nuclear weapon and threatening to use it. It plays right into Netanyahu's fantasies of poor, helpless nuclear Israel, the victim of Iranian aggression. In reality, Iran has not attacked another nation in modern history. If only Israel or the United States could say as much. As I said, I'm glad anyone announced they'd skip the speech for any reason. But I found it deeply disturbing that an enormously important and deeply moral reason to skip the speech was obvious and known to every member of Congress, and while most were acting against it, those acting in accordance with it refused to articulate it. The reason is this: Netanyahu was coming to spread war propaganda. He told Congress lies about Iraq in 2002 and pushed for a U.S. war. He has been lying, according to leaks last week, of his own spies' information and according to the understanding of the U.S., quote, intelligence services, about Iran. It is illegal to spread war propaganda under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, to which Israel is a party. Congress is struggling to keep up with the wars President Obama is continuing, launching, and risking. Here's one war Obama seems not to want, and Congress is bringing in a foreign leader with a record of war lies to give them their marching orders. Meanwhile, an agency of that same foreign government, AIPAC, is holding its big lobby meeting in Washington. Now, it is true that nuclear energy facilities create dangerous targets. Those drones flying around French nuclear plants scare the hell out of me. And it is true that nuclear energy places its possessor a short step away from nuclear weaponry, which is why the U.S. should stop spreading nuclear energy to countries that have no need of it, and why the U.S. should never have given nuclear bomb plans to Iran or sentenced Jeffrey Sterling to prison for allegedly revealing that act. But you can't accomplish good by using horrific mass murder to avoid horrific mass murder, and that's what Israeli-U.S. aggression toward Iran means. Stirring up a new Cold War with Russia in Syria and Ukraine is dangerous enough without throwing Iran into the mix. But even a war that confined itself to Iran would be horrifying. Imagine if we had one Congress member who would say, "I'm skipping the speech because I'm opposed to killing Iranians." I know we have lots of constituents who like to think that their progressive Congress member secretly thinks that. But I'll believe it when I hear it. Let me read you another petition which you can sign at diy.rootsaction.org, the do-it-yourself site where you can make your own petitions. No weapons to Ukraine. An open letter to the U.S. Senate. Reject S-452, a bill to provide lethal weapons to the government of Ukraine. Why is this important? The United States is the leading provider of weapons to the world, and the practice of providing weapons to countries in crisis has proven disastrous, including in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. Expanding NATO to Russia's border and arming Russia's neighbors threatens something worse than disaster. the United States is toying with nuclear war. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland and U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt played significant roles in orchestrating the political crisis that led to a violent coup, overthrowing Ukraine's elected president. Nuland not only exclaimed, "the EU," on that recorded phone call, but she also seemed to decide on the next prime minister. Yats is the guy. The Maidan protests were violently escalated by neo-Nazis and by snipers who opened fire on police. When Poland, Germany, and France negotiated a deal for the Maidan demands and an early election, neo-Nazis instead attacked the government and took over. The U.S. State Department immediately recognized the coup government, and Yatsenyuk was indeed installed as prime minister. The people of Crimea voted overwhelmingly to secede, and that, rather than the coup, has been labeled aggression. Ethnic Russians have been massacred by constant shelling from Kiev's U.S. NATO-backed army, while Russia has been denounced for aggression, in the form of various unsubstantiated accusations, including the downing of Flight 17. It's important to recognize Western interests at work here, other than peace and generosity. GMO outfits want the excellent farming soil in Ukraine. The U.S. and NATO want a missile defense base in Ukraine. Oil corporations want a drill for fracked gas in Ukraine. The U.S. and EU want to get their hands on Russia's, quote, largest supply of natural gas on the planet. We routinely recognize the financial corruption of the U.S. government in domestic policymaking. We shouldn't blind ourselves to it in matters of foreign policy. There may be a flag waving, but there is nuclear war looming, and that's a bit more important. Initial signers of this petition include a long list of great people, and I encourage you to sign it too. Okay, let me give you the schedule of events for Spring Rising from springrising.org, and you can contact the organizers through that site if you want to propose an addition. And this schedule is being added to all the time, so keep checking springrising.org. Wednesday, March 18th, 5 to 7:30 p.m., meet and greet. 7:30 p.m., concert, David Rovics and Friends at the Plymouth United Church of Christ, 5301 North Capitol Street, Northeast. David Rovics is one of our greatest singers, songwriters, and opponents of wars and militarism. You don't want to miss this concert. Thursday, March 19th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., Challenging Congress, a morning of lobbying against U.S. wars, organized by Code Pink. Meet in the Rayburn House Office Cafeteria at 45 Independence Avenue, Southwest. 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., People's Uprising Tour, From Empire and War to Justice with Peace. This bus tour will start at the U.S. Capitol and end at the White House, a bus tour organized by the People's Soapbox Network to offices of those agencies and companies who plan, profit from, and are complicit in war crimes of empire. 7 to 9 p.m., Teach-In, Part 1, Connected U.S. Military Aggression and Climate Catastrophe. Speakers, May Abdul-Rahman, David Schwartzman, and others to be announced. La Casa, 3166 Mount Pleasant Street, Northwest. Friday, March 20th, 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m., Teach-In Part 2, organized by World Can't Wait at the University of the District of Columbia Law School, 4200 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest. 11 to 12:30, From Ukraine to ISIS to Drones, Why We Must Demilitarize U.S. Foreign Policy. Speakers include Marjorie Cohn, Matthew Ho, and Ray McGovern. 1 to 2:30, Stopping Targeted Killing by the U.S. Around the World and Stopping Killing with Impunity by U.S. Police, Connections and Challenges. Speakers include Marsha Coleman Adebayo, Carl Dix, and Nick Mottern. 3 to 4:30, End These Endless Wars, Perspectives from Veterans and Military Families. Speakers include Kevin Lucy. 5 to 6:30 p.m., World Beyond War, An Alternative Global Security System. Speakers include myself, David Swanson, Matthew Ho, and Robert Fantina. And you can learn more about this project at worldbeyondwar.org. 7 to 9 p.m., U.S. Wars of Aggression and Islamic Jihad. What is the danger, and how should the anti-war movement respond? Speakers include William Bloom, Alan Goodman, Raed Jarrar, Cindy Sheehan, and Dahlia Wasfi. Next day, Saturday, March 21st, a rally and a march. Rally at 12 p.m. noon, organized by Answer. Gather at Lafayette Park across from the White House. Confirmed speakers include Cindy Sheehan, Deborah Sweet, myself, David Swanson, and Brian Becker, many more to be confirmed. And a march at 1 p.m. We will be marching from Lafayette Park through Chinatown and ending at the Capitol, where there will be a brief rally. Along the march route, we will be stopping at designated intersections and locations for mini rallies, actions, and speakers. Spring Rising is an opportunity for everyone who cares about peace, for everyone who wants to see the U.S. government stop slaughtering human beings in distant places in numbers large and small, for everyone who wants to see the counterproductive policy of alienating the world, of building hostility, of creating resentment, of fueling violence, and of arming that violence reversed and transformed into a policy of cooperation and respect and diplomacy and work together with the rest of the world on projects that seem daunting when we're wasting $2 trillion a year as a species and $1 trillion a year as a nation in the United States on the greatest crime humanity has yet invented. We need that money to be put to better uses. We need it to seek an answer to the climate crisis, the climate chaos that is facing this planet. This is an opportunity not only for those who have been part of peace movements before, but for those who want to see the world survive the risk of nuclear war, survive the risk of climate destruction, and begin moving in a direction that is sustainable, survivable, and perhaps even more enjoyable than the form of life we've known thus far with our extreme consumerism and our militarism on hair trigger alert. This is an opportunity for a bigger, better Occupy movement that recognizes the enemy of wealth distribution and fairness and equality in the military machinery that is sucking down over half of discretionary spending from the U.S. federal budget every year and diverting that money into the hands of a few wealthy profiteers who are the only people that benefit from continuing this madness of war after war after war. This is an opportunity for everyone who's asked for an organized, coordinated, strategic effort at changing the direction this country and the world are headed. Here is a chance to do something on a weekday and on a weekend. Here is a chance to do lobbying and resistance, education and outreach, marching and protesting and communicating through the media. I'm looking forward to Spring Rising, and I can't wait to see all of you there. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.